Welcome to Chapter 27, An Amazing 18 Months. In June of 1984, I decided to take a walk on the beach in Margate and was reflecting on where I was going to go with the rest of my life. I'd pretty much taken the previous 6 months to a year off after my dad and my best friend both passed. I collected my thoughts and I decided on that nice June day walking on the beach that I was going to memorialize Margate by bringing the company public and naming it Margate Ventures. What better name to start a career on? I decided at the same time, every stock, by the way, has a symbol that the brokers used to trade it. I decided, I'm looking at the beach, seagulls, I decided to use the symbol CGUL. It was easy to remember, and I didn't have to explain where Margate was when someone knew what the symbol was. Since this was the first time I'd ever undertaken anything like this, I reached out to some people I had got to know through my Stansbury experience, and during the time from the late 70s to the mid 80s, the real market for low-priced stocks had kind of shifted from Salt Lake City to Denver. So I made the necessary contacts and started the ball rolling. I'm going to take a few minutes to describe the business side of this so that the listener will have a better understanding moving forward with some other similar type deals. Margate Ventures was a blind pool. A blind pool is exactly what it sounds like. It's the pooling of money blindly. In other words, you do not have a specific goal, a business plan, when you go public. You basically are going public, and then you're going to seek out opportunities, whether they be acquisitions or what have you. Hence the name blind pool. Not too many folks really, as I mentioned earlier, undertake that method of bringing a company public, because you pretty much have to have your own following of people, since you really are your own broker. I had the benefit of having the Stansbury experience and the excitement that surrounded that stock, so it wasn't real difficult for me to attract some investors, plus the fact we were only going to raise $80,000. So I basically gave the stock out in spoon size, $200 increments or what have you. That meant that more people could be involved. And I like to have a broader base of shareholders, because once things started, shareholders really kind of represent your sales force. They take the story to the world. As we begin this career journey, I want to take a minute to point out one thing I learned at this outset, and it served me well throughout the entire career, and that is what I learned was the value of a track record. The fact that I was involved with Stansbury and the Martin Marietta deal made it infinitely easier for me to interest people in what I was doing. Not just shareholders, but I come to find out other companies that might be candidates to move forward in an acquiring mode. And that I found to be very, very helpful. So the message here is, if you have a success, use that as a building block. Don't make it an isolated event. Play connect the dots. I did, and it worked out very well. Okay, having said that, here we go. Margate went public in the spring of 1985. Within a few months, we were lucky enough to target a large private company, the New Haven Foundry in New Haven, Michigan, as a candidate for a reverse merger, meaning that we were going to acquire, we, the this $80,000 public company were going to acquire a foundry that was doing about $35 million a year and had 500 employees. Now, let me clarify, explain why a private company would want to be public. It's pretty simple, actually. There are two main reasons. The first one is in borrowing. If a private company needs money, they pretty much have to go to the bank and go into debt. If a public company is looking to raise money, they can do stock offering, secondary, things like that. So they can sell a piece of the company off and raise the money and not have to deal with debt. The second reason, which is equally if not more important, is covered in one word, liquidity. If you are a shareholder in a private company, and unless you own 51% or more, if you are a minority holder, your stock pretty much is worthless. What I mean by worthless, I don't mean the actual value if this company is sold. I'm talking about worthless in liquidity. It is impossible to sell when there's no market for a minority shareholder for their stock. You would have to find somebody privately to buy it. Usually the best candidate are the people or individual who own the majority because they have a vested interest in it. Whereas in a public company, you can have 1/10 of 1/10 of 1/10 of 1%, 100 shares out of 50 million, and sell it in the marketplace. So that's a big item. Both of these, one is a corporate reason and the other one is a personal reason. When I started negotiating with the principals of New Haven Foundry, I liked the people, I liked the business, and it was to me, it was an ideal merger candidate for Margate. I wanted this deal. So during the initial negotiations, a lot of people, when they negotiate, they think if they hold back and they don't show their enthusiasm, somehow they get a better deal, or if they show their enthusiasm, feel that maybe the other side will take advantage of them because they know that they want to do the deal. I have never been a subscriber to that. Early on in the negotiations, I told them how much I wanted to do it, and I offered to return 90% of my stock along with the other principals to make this happen. And somebody would say, well, why would you do that? Well, it's mathematically simple. Is it better to have 5 million shares of a 2-cent stock or 500,000 shares of a 60-some cent stock? I rest my case. The owners of the foundry responded in a positive way, saw my level of enthusiasm coupled with my previous track record with Stansberry and Martin Marietta, and we did the deal. What happened next could only be described as surrealistic. The stock responded, to put it mildly. I'm going to read one thing that one publication called the SA Advisory, which was a major publication in the low price stock in the country. It says, in December 1985, Margate Ventures continues to explode upward. Recommended at 2 cents a unit, Margate Ventures is currently bid at 65 cents a unit. The stock of the year has appreciated 3,250%. The scariest part is that wasn't the best. The best was coming at the end of the year. At the end of 1985, Margate appeared in Business Week, where it said that Margate Ventures, a blind pool, up from 2 cents to 68 cents. These may not look like big gains, but in percentage terms, they are huge. And in the U.S. News and World Report, I don't think they've ever mentioned a penny stock in the history. I may be wrong. Here we go. This is in their last edition. under the title Treasure Hunts and Marbles, High Stake Plays. Each year brings some, quote, dark horse, unquote, investments, an assortment of long shots that few expected would pay off big. Picking such flukes in advance is a risky business, but a few experts were willing to predict the unpredictable for 1986. Investors who gambled on last June's offering of Margate Ventures, a penny stock, received a 3,150% return within 6 months. Was I having a good time? Yeah. Well, if you get the impression I enjoyed reliving this part of my life, you're right. Anyway, moving ahead, I wound up resigning in August of 1987 because I was getting ready to bring Ventnor Corp public in September of 87, another 2 cent blind pool. And of course, for those in the area, you know that Margate and Ventnor are two communities at South Jersey Shore. And before all this book is over, there'll be another, the third and final one public offering that I brought public, Longport. So if you're going down Atlantic City Expressway near the end toward Atlantic City, you'll see a sign says Margate Ventnor Longport. So I decided to bring the South Jersey Shore public one town at a time. Thank you. Up next, the downside of trying to impress someone.